Today on the Profitable Tradie Podcast.
I honestly would lay awake at night thinking to myself, what the hell am I doing here, you know? 2022 was our live or die year. We had invested everything we have into this company. So we had to make a decision. Either we put more money into it or we just let it go and we lose everything. I came to work for the company in 2015 and then bought the company in 2019. When I started, we had 20 people in the company. Our payroll grew from $50,000 a week to $250,000 a week.
On today's episode, I interview Steve Thomas from FlexErect in Houston, Texas, who's a member of our Boardroom Coaching Group. Now, Steve is a determined and hardworking entrepreneur who has built a multi-million dollar business that employs over 100 people. Now, his story of overcoming challenges is inspirational. There's some great insights about what it takes to grow a successful business.
We were doing about $2 million a year in 2015. We just had the wrong project, the wrong people, the wrong controls, no processes. At that point, we had 80 plus people working for us, so I failed every one of them. Going into this year, we've put about $2 million back into the company, and we made a stretch goal to get to $30 million. Honestly, that was the best decision I've ever made for the company. I think one of our biggest failures right now today is that.
Don't miss this episode if you want to know the secrets of growing a substantial business. You're listening to the Profitable Tradie Podcast, where we'll help you turn your business into a money-making machine. We know you're busy, so we'll make it worth your time. Thanks for tuning in. And remember, time is money, and we're here to help you make more of both. So hit the follow button and let's get started. To the podcast. They say success leaves clues. On today's episode, I interview Steve Thomas from FlexErect in Houston, Texas. So welcome, Steve. It's amazing to have you here today, mate. Really looking forward to getting into it.
It's great to be here, Tony. It's a truly an honor to sit on the podcast with you.
I was going back through the notes of when you joined the coaching program. I think it was back in 2023, and it makes some interesting reading. Your revenue, I think, was around about $8 million a year, and your profit was sort of around 5% after making a loss the year before. And business was really super stressful and quite overwhelming. And you knew the business had lots of potential, but you were just a bit stuck on how to make it all happen. So I guess to jump in, before we talk about what you've done, just to help the listeners have some context, can you tell us a little bit about the business that you have, you know, the type of work, who the typical clients are, and how the team is set up?
So last November was our 20-year anniversary. I came to work for the company in 2015 and then bought the company in 2019. We have right at 118 people right now. We started the year with over 150 people, and probably by the end of this year, we'll be pushing 200 people, I imagine. Our clients are typically large general contractors, and then steel fabricator.
It's a pretty interesting and dynamic business, and there's lots of cool stuff to learn. What I'd love to do is, can you just talk us through why it was important to make changes and get help with the business when you did?
Yeah, I mean, I'll be completely transparent with you. In 2022 was our live or die year. And we ended 2022 with a substantial loss in the company. We had taken on the wrong projects. We had the wrong team in place. We didn't have controls in place to monitor our projects. Honestly, at the end of the year, when I was giving our presentation to the employees at our Christmas party, I was trying to be as upbeat as I possibly could. But in my mind, the whole time, I'm thinking, I'm not going to be here in February. And I mean, I think I was just, I had reached the end. I was defeated out and really just, I think I was just trying to escape where I was at. So after that party, I went home and sat down with my wife and we talked through all the issues. And, you know, we had invested everything we have into this company. So we had to make a decision. Either we put more money into it or we just let it go and we lose everything. So between some debt that we took on and some more personal finance, we put about $2 million back into the company to keep us rolling into 2023. When I came to the company, we were doing about $2 million a year in 2015. Obviously, we grew that up to about 8.5. And like I said, in 2022, we were just hemorrhaging money. And it was just mistakes across the board from the team, from me all the way down. We just had the wrong project, the wrong people, the wrong controls, no processes in place. And that really, really hurt us. Our accounting was lagging behind months, not days, but months behind. So even if we wanted to look, we had no way to see where our projects were actually coming in at, you know? And that's when I started about mid 2022 looking for something to help me. And I looked at a bunch of the coaching programs here in the States, and I looked at the EOS programs, the CEO groups that are in town, and none of them, well, all of them seem to be just a sales job, right? And it never sat well with me. And I was on the internet doing something, and you guys popped up. And I wasn't even looking at coaching programs at that point, but I figure, what the hell, I'll give it a chance. And the one thing that really talked to me the most is, right out of the box when I was interviewing with you guys, you started challenging me on how I was answering questions, what happened to get me to this point and where I'm going. And that's exactly what I was looking for in a program. And that's really that was our turning point in the company.
Yeah. So Steve, it was tough. How did it affect you, you know, personally? How did it make you feel, the situation that you found yourself in?
I mean, you feel like a complete failure. You've got, at that point, we had 80 plus people working for us. So I failed every one of them. My family, I failed. So it was tough. I mean, how do you look at losing everything and can't find anything but failure, you know? And I think as entrepreneurs, we are always seeking that success.
Yeah. It's a challenge for sure. And I think a lot of people find themselves in similar situations. Sometimes just getting up in the morning and having another go is a win for the day.
Right.
So that was kind of the bottom of the pile. How does business look now?
So 2024, we ended the year at just $14.7 million in gross revenue. We had a GP of about 30%, net profit of 10. And obviously, by far and away, that was our best year ever in the company. We've never done revenue like that ever. Going into this year, we had set a goal for ourselves of $25 million in gross sales. Dwayne, our coach in the boardroom program, really pushed me on that. And we made a stretch goal to get to $30 million. Today, or at the end of May, we had $11.6 million in revenue already booked. We have about $5 million worth of work left to complete a work in progress. We've got $10.6 million in contracts that are signed, ready to start work. And we have another commitment of about $3.5 million of work that we've been verbally awarded, but we're waiting on the contracts coming. So it is the year with PT has just shifted the company completely.
So what does that... if we add all that up, where's that look like it's landing?
I think that we will hit the sales goal of 30 million, but I'm a little less sure of work in place, just because a lot of our larger contracts, we're waiting on other people to get stuff done before we can start. And I think we'll probably be in the $25 to $28 million of actual work in place this year, which my goal all along was to get to 15. So we've already surpassed that. So
it's a pretty amazing achievement, given you were, you know, sort of eight and a half, not that long ago. Which I hope you've given yourself a pat on the back for, because it's a solid effort. So let's talk about some other aspects. How has your role changed from where you were, a couple of years ago to what you're doing in the business now?
So really, right now, my biggest role is just relationships with our bank, our insurance companies. I do still work in the accounting stuff as just overseeing stuff, but that's only because I just can't let go of that, because it is my money at the end of the day, right? So that's something we're working through. We just brought on our accountant full time, and I trust him explicitly, you know, so I think I think that'll help me pull back from that side of it for sure.
Yeah. Okay. And what have the results meant for you and Diana and the family?
So last year was our 30th anniversary. The first time I've ever taken her anywhere for our wedding anniversary was last year. So that was a huge milestone for us. Going into this year, you know, everything's still kind of taking shape, but you know, we're going to go on a trip for her birthday this year in August, and we're really planning between Thanksgiving and Christmas, New Year, that we're going to be pretty scarce around here. And I love to work, so it is a challenge for me not to be here, but I also realize that I don't want to do this forever either. So being away really, it kind of recharges me and keeps me focused on the initiatives and stuff that I'm working on.
Yeah, I think like all business owners, we have that workaholic tendency. Yes. We do love to work, but sometimes it does take us over a little bit, and it gets a little bit out of balance. I'll put my hand up for that one for sure. What do you like to do for fun, Steve?
I love spending time with the family. My daughter and new son-in-law, they live in Houston, but they're still about an hour away, so we get to see them once a week is what we're trying to do. So that obviously is great for us. I have a ranch that I love to be out on. It's an old ranch, but there's been a lot of families on it. So rebuilding the ranch and getting it back to what it originally was is what we're working on now. And that I enjoy that more than anything, probably. That and my phone only works on the highway. It doesn't work out on the ranch. So I get
How
some
good is that?
There. Yeah.
Such a blessing and a curse, the phone. Yeah. Okay. So you've made lots of changes, Steve, and I think you've done some things really, really well. So I thought we could focus on a few of those that have made a big difference and just share some of the lessons and the wisdom that you've with the listeners. And we could just talk about some of those strategies. And in my experience, you know, entrepreneurs like yourself who have grown quickly are actually really good at sales and winning, you know, more jobs. And I think you do fit the mold here. So how do you go about sales and marketing, and what has made you successful here? You know, what are the drivers of this revenue growth for you?
Well, I think, you know, we don't do a whole lot of direct sales or marketing per se. Our industry in this region is really all about relationships, and that's what we're building. So from myself all the way down to the guys in the field, everything we do is about building that relationship. The projects, they're a byproduct of the relationship we're building. And then beyond that, what I think is really the selling point for us is the quality of our work, what we do to stand behind our work. And when shit goes awry, how we stand behind that. And that, time and time again, I hear that from our clients that, you know, I wish that other people could be like you guys and stand up when there is a problem. And we're never going to walk away from that.
So you talk about relationships, and I'd love to unpack that a little bit, because it's easy to say we build relationships. But on the ground, on a day-to-day sort of basis, what does building relationships, what do you actually do that? Because it's not something that just happens. It does take, you know, active, proactive work.
Right. So our biggest thing is we're going to be transparent with our clients. We have to be transparent about our pricing. We're transparent about our work. We don't hide stuff. We're there for their benefit. It's a partnership is the way we look at it. And if we can't be a partner with them, then we have no business being out on that site with that client. And there are clients that we've had that either don't want that or want something else. And we're just not set up for that. And we'll walk away and spend our resources on something else. But we tell our guys all the time to be fair and right. I live by that, and we can't do anything but be fair for ourselves, our people that work for us, and our clients. And we got to be right with our decisions, meaning we're not lying, we're not cheating, we're not trying to make millions of dollars on one client. You know, I had a client years ago that told me, he said, "I want you to make money. I want you to make money on all my jobs. I just don't want you to make money on one of my, on, I don't make, I don't want you to make all your money on one of my jobs." And that really resonated with me because it is about the long term.
Yeah, that's actually great advice. Don't make money on one job, make them on lots of jobs. So you've obviously grown from, you know, the work you've done in Texas and in a bunch of other states right across the Southeast. How have you managed to find those jobs so quickly? And is that just the same contractors who have liked what you've done and are working in other areas? Or what have you done to actively, you know, work with new contractors?
So we had a fairly large customer base, but when we started really looking at it, we were too leveraged with 3 to 4 people. And, you know, our biggest decision for growth was bringing people. So our first real big hire was a new chief estimator. And when he came on board, he brought clients with him. And just like everybody, if you worked somewhere before, when you leave, or if you leave, the people that you built a relationship with will most likely follow you. And that did happen. So since hiring him, we've hired other key people in the company. And that is truly what we're seeing our growth is based off of, is the people, the key people we're putting in the company that believe in our core values, that follow our principles. And I think that's what's really pushing our growth.
That's a very interesting approach, because most people would be thinking, hey, I need to go out and hustle and market and look for new clients. And you've gone about it a slightly different way, in the sense that you've built a culture where A players like to come and work. You've attracted them and then you've actually bought their relationships with them, which has then manifested in a bunch of more clients and projects.
Correct.
Yeah, so that's a really cool strategy. I love that. What would your advice be to other business owners who want to grow revenue but are finding themselves stuck?
I think, first of all, the decision to scale, for me at least, was extremely scary, especially coming off of a year like we had in 22, right? Because the one wrong decision, it's like, shit, I'm right back where I was. But I think we as business owners have to set up ourselves, our business, and our people for success. And in my opinion, the only way we can really do that is get our systems, our KPIs, and that in place, so that we're measuring what we say we're going to do. We're measuring our project performance. We're measuring our people perform. So that's huge. The other thing is just understand that a single person cannot scale a company like we've done. There's no way I could have done this on my own. It had to be a team effort from all of us. And although everybody's got a different bucket they're filling, it all means something at the end of the day. You know, I think the last part, and probably the biggest, is to make sure that our vendors know, our clients know what we're anticipating. Our insurance companies, our bonding companies, and especially our banks, right? We have to let them know where we're headed so that they can be on board with us. And then finally, the biggest one, and probably the one I failed at the most, was making sure my wife knew where we were going, because it is some scary shit out there, you know? And when you start going from, I mean, when I started, we had 20 people in the company. To this year, when we started 150, our payroll grew from $50,000 a week to $250,000 a week. And that is that's a big move to make. And if your spouse and family aren't on board, you could be sunk easy. So,
yeah, it's pretty scary for people who aren't one step removed, because they don't have any real control over it. It's scary okay. enough when you kind of do have some control when you're yep. in the captain's seat. So, okay, so let's dig into the money side of things. I love the way that you have worked on your profitability and the cash flow in the business. What did you actually do to improve the business profitability and cash flow?
I think it's the accountability side of it, right? So when I first came on, the previous owner, his idea of accounting was put it in a shoebox and give it to the accountant at the end of the year, and he'll do your taxes kind of deal. So growing from that to where we are now, I mean, even into 23, I'm the only one that had access to the financials on the project. So that was we were tying everybody's hands behind their back with that. So we started having weekly meetings where we would dig in and go through every single project in the company, looking at progress to financials. So that was good, but it was also a pain because it took so much time to go through. I mean, at any given time, we may have 30 projects going. So we made the decision late 2023 to move on to a specialized software, and we've made the jump in that. It's taken a little bit longer than what I wanted to get up and running, but this is now, and we're not 100% finished yet, but it has now put financials in front of the people. Our field guys get to look at percentage complete on their labor, on their equipment rental, on consumables and stuff like that. So that's been a huge part of getting us back to where everybody's looking at the same end goal. We know as a company that we have to be profitable. If we're not profitable, we're not moving forward, and we'll start losing ground. So I think that has really, really been a big push. I think the other thing is we're really doing turnover meetings that we haven't had before. So when we win a project, our estimators will go through and they pull everything together. We sit down with our PMs and we go through everything. So here's our risk potential. Here's our opportunities where we could gain fee. Here's our equipment. Here's what we expect time-wise. And then we let the PM go through and develop his budget for the project. And then he'll have a turnover meeting to the field guys that are actually running the job. And that way historically in our industry, we win a job, the PM gets it a week before it starts, and the field guys get it the day it starts. So it's just, you're walking on a project cold and you have no idea what's going on. So I think that has been pretty huge for us. I think the one big thing that we're still working with the software on is our back costing. I've been doing the back costing across the board on projects since 23, and we've seen improvements and we do talk about it, but I want to get it out of me and into the guys in the PM role. So that's something that we're hoping the software we can develop into the software. So it's a little bit easier for them to do. And it's one more thing we can check off the list that we're actually looking at and making progress.
So what's the software that you've implemented?
Procore.
Yep. So Procore. Yep. I think there's a massive lesson there. And I know for a lot of the listeners, and you may not be doing 25, 30 million like Steve's business. You might be doing 500,000 or 1.5 or 5 million, whatever it is. The principle is exactly the same, and the lesson needs to be learned. Take the time to get the right software in your business. It'll give you transparency and visibility on your numbers, and it will change your life. Yep. Because when you start looking at numbers, we're all smart. We can see what's going on. When we can see what's going on, we can make changes. And a lot of that, you're right, a lot of the success has come because you actually have transparency on the numbers of the jobs, and that comes from the system. Obviously, when you have a large business, it's impossible to do this with spreadsheets and by hand. I mean, unless you like pain and you never want to sleep, which I don't suggest. So I would really encourage anyone to make sure you get the right field software, job management software. It's probably not Procore for a lot of you. It might be some other stuff. But I love the way that you've put the numbers when I say the lowest possible position in the business, I don't mean that in a judgmental way, but at the coalface, because they're the people who can actually they're the ones who make the difference. Right. And so you're giving them a lot of power, and I think that's tremendously powerful. Transparency is critical. So this is great stuff. And I love that you're still working on the back costing. We'll keep kicking your ass on that, because that's that's the key to success. Make the jobs profitable and you win. It's as simple as that. Everything else is kind of just smoke and mirrors. So that's amazing. Is there anything else that you would say for business owners who are struggling financially as a good place to start? Is there anything we haven't picked up there that you've found helpful?
I think for us, and it may be different where you guys are at in New Zealand and Australia, but for us, we've implemented a pretty stringent lean process in the company, in that we have a program that now sends our intent to liens and follows it up every month and making sure we're protecting our rights to get paid on the work we've done. Cash flow is always a huge issue for us, because we are signing contracts that are a pay when paid, meaning I don't get paid until the general contractor gets paid, and he doesn't get paid until the owner pays him. So our holdup in cash flow is really at the owner's feet. And we have some that are 60 days, but majority of them are beyond that. You know, our typical is probably, I don't know, 68 to 70 days right now is what the industry kind of is standardized on, which when you're talking about an organization our size, that's a huge amount of cash to be fronting. So I think the next, or the probably the biggest relationship you need to build is with your bank, and have a line of credit, have them understand where you're at. And honestly, our bank, we've been with them since I bought the company in 2019, and they've been through all of it with us, the good and the bad. And they stood by us, which is kind of unheard of.
Yeah, and I think irrespective of what state you're in or what country, the process that you're talking about is you have to manage your cash flow absolutely like just like a demon. And you have to be across it, and you have to have strong processes, whether it's looking at funding or whether it's enforcement processes against receivables. That's the key lesson here. Don't leave it to chance. And I know a lot of us are like, well, people will pay us, you know, when they can. You know, you've got to take as much control of that process as you can. And most of us can take way more control than we think. I think that's probably the big lesson. Would that be right?
Yep. Yeah, I agree with that 100%.
Yeah. Otherwise, you're just left in the wind.
Yep.
And it's not a nice feeling. In fact, I don't think there's anything worse.
Yeah, I think since we brought our accounting in-house now, and he's been with us since end of March, and we've only had a short window with him in the driver's seat, but I mean, he is relentless in hounding our clients on payment, and he's providing the level of detail that we never provided before, because you're rushing too fast, and having that ability to look, here's the five invoices you owe us on. They're stretching all the way back to January. When are we getting paid? You know, so that right there, that level of detail has really pushed our receivables down. I mean, we're still sitting well over millions of dollars in receivables right now, but it's better than we were in January for sure.
Yeah, that's great advice, and I think that moves nicely into talking about structure when you're talking about bringing on your accountant. So how important has been building out the organization structure been for the growth of your business?
For me, it was huge. I knew what I wanted to do, but I never put it on paper. And then when I started putting it on paper, it was designing these blocks or the groups, and then I could move them around to where it fit with where I was going. And beyond that, now my lenders knew what I was planning. My clients know what I'm planning, and my people that work for us know what is going, because they're looking for growth too. They don't want to sit in stagnant in a position. They want to be able to grow. So as soon as they start seeing these opportunities, I think that's inspired them as well. Has it always been perfect? No, we're still shuffling around people and making changes to make it work for everybody. But I think getting it on paper, that was the defining, one of the defining moments for the company.
Yeah, this is massive, and it's probably not something that at first take appears obvious, but if you're going to grow a business, you're going to need more people to do the stuff to grow the business. And your structure is basically that chart, that drawing of all the roles that you need. And so you've gone through the process of drawing what you need to get to where you want to go, and you can put that in front of your team. It tells you who you need to hire. It shows them where they can aim for, and it means you're actually proactively building the team that's going to help them build the business. And I think that's happened very much in your case. The growth has come through building the structure, through getting the capacity, the right people in the right spots, and the growth has followed. What I would love to know, though, and this is the thing that really people find hard, is how do you manage that fear of hiring more people, particularly back of office overheads, when it sometimes doesn't feel like they're going to, you know, drive the bottom line results?
You know, I guess when we got through 22 and we started seeing that we were back in a profitable position, and I knew I had to do something I honestly would lay awake at night thinking to myself, what the hell am I doing here? You know, how am I going to pay for this? And PT, I think, is what really pushed me beyond that, because you guys are the ones that got me thinking about, if we do hire this, this is the benefit. But if we don't hire, here's the cost we're going to see. Right. And at some point you realize you can't do everything yourself either. And I know that to keep my people growing in the field, I've got to have people in the office that are backing them up. And so once we hired our chief estimator, and honestly, I was sitting, he'd chased us for a year and I kept pushing him back. And when we finally got to the interview phase, he gave me a salary requirement and I was scared, you know, but I talked to my coach at the time and we walked through it, and she helped me plan it out, and we bit the bullet. And honestly, that was the best decision I've ever made for the company, you know. And we were just having discussions today about some more hires we're making, and the team is bringing up to me the salary, and it's like, look, guys, we need to get past that, because if we don't put this person on, where are we going to be? You guys are going to be overworked, overloaded, and we're not going to hit the growth that we want for next year, you know. So it is going down now in the company, and everybody is starting to see it.
I love that that little distinction you've made, because I think most of us are like, how much is this going to cost me to hire this person? But the most important question is, how much is it going to cost not to hire them?
That's right.
And the cost not to hire is basically you're giving up your future, increased profitability, the freedom and flexibility that comes from actually having a real business has team to do stuff to help you. So that's if you're listening, that's a gold nugget you should definitely take when you're worried about that fear of hiring, because we all have it. I have it. Everyone has it. But you've got to switch it around and reframe it to what's the cost of not doing it. And growing a business like yours does require obviously a lot of employees. So what have you done to attract and retain good people that you feel maybe other businesses don't do?
Yeah. So in our industry in Houston, all of the steel erectors in Houston, they pay a guy an hourly wage. I've never been okay with that. So from top to bottom in the company, we offer holiday pay, we have vacation pay, PTO, we offer medical, dental, and vision insurance to everybody. We have company paid life insurance. We have company paid death and dismemberment insurance. We do safety training on a monthly basis for everybody. You know, other companies, they only train their managers and everything else is just supposed to feed down. We pay most companies in the industry across the United States will pay a team that is working on a job out of town one round trip. We actually pay our teams every time they go and come back. And why would I want to do a job 4 hours away and not get paid to drive up there every week? So I think those type of incentives or benefits are really helping us to attract the right people. It's not always 100% accurate, but we've had some people that really are just here for a place, and we've hired people that are just placeholders. You know, I don't think I'm the only company that's done that, but it's bit us in the ass every time we've done it. Right. So, I think beyond that, we do track industry wages. I believe right now we are the top wage provider in Houston. And we are seeing some jump over because of that. So I think our culture, you know, we have not always had a good culture in the company. I mean, we struggled. I think it was really a communication issue from top down of what we were as a company. Even to the first time I started with PT, I was still struggling with it. We're making our core values now are holding people accountable. And honestly, one of the groups in my boardroom team is, they're the ones that kind of help me define how we judge people on our core values. And it's from top to bottom. I expect that anybody, if I'm doing something that doesn't meet our core values, that somebody's going to call me out on it. And we want to praise the people too. And, you know, that's been hard for me because I've always, you know, you hope everything goes great, but you're always planning for the worst thing, right? So seeing the wins, seeing the positive stuff, that's been a huge struggle for me, but we are making changes on that. So
I'm pleased you mentioned that because I got to say I'm guilty as charged with that one. It's so easy to see what's not going well,
right?
And forget to be grateful for that which is,
right?
And it definitely changes your experience of business and life when you can be grateful for what is going well, because there's always stuff that is. In fact, the fact that we have a business, that's something to be grateful for a start. Probably don't feel like it sometimes, but it definitely gives us some opportunities that we might not otherwise have. With the culture, you talked about values. So can you just talk us through, did you have a process where you set the values or how did that happen?
So when I first came to the company, we, myself and one other person kind of hammered through them. And for the most part, they're the same, but we've added to them. And we run through it with most of our management and everybody's in agreement. There is still some struggle with getting the guys in the field to understand it. But, you know, at the end of the day, it's the only thing that's going to drive us in the company. And, you know, our first core value is the safety of our guys. That to me is the most important beyond profits in the company or anything else. In 2018, we had the worst accident in company history. And we didn't have a fatality, but one of our guys who is a 40-year veteran of the industry just did one stupid move and pretty much lost his hand. And we had really revamped our safety prior to that, but that was a turning moment for me. And our safety is our number one core value in the company. We will not accept anything but the best response, the best actions on safety. If they're not performing the way we want, you really have no more recourse after that. And the company as a whole, everybody understands that they can stop anything we're doing at any given time if it doesn't meet our safety standards. Our next one is profitability, because like I said, if we're not profitable as a company, we can't provide for the company, we can't provide for growth, we can't provide for our people. And that is one that we've added. And I think most people here understand the need for that, especially as we're growing. The accountability one is that's one people give us pushback on, because you're being held to a standard, right? And some people don't like that, but a majority of our people, they're proud guys and they want to shine. And so when you're holding other people accountable, it really makes a difference for everybody. Our commitment, which is one of our long-term core values, it's my commitment to the company, to the employees' commitment back to us, and then how we commit to our projects and our customers. Integrity is ingrained in me. I mean, we're going to deal with everybody the right way. I don't want to lie, cheat, steal from anybody. We're going to live our values. And then one that you guys actually brought was trust, right? If you can't trust me to do what I say for you, and I can't trust you to do what you say you're going to do for me, then we have no way to move forward. So, you know, that has been huge for us. And honestly, it's been so huge. We just finished a video series on our core values with people from the company. I'm hoping it'll be ready in the next couple of weeks, and we're going to start pushing that out on social media and that kind of stuff. So,
yeah, look, I think people probably underestimate how powerful this is, because the company, the values are what you stand for in the business, and everything, all decisions are made around that. And I think the one you talked about, accountability, is a good example, because the people that you want to work in your business actually love accountability. They love to know that they're winning. They love to know where they can improve. The ones who don't love that, well, they don't actually have a place in the business. It's not that they're bad people. It's just like, we probably want to free up their future so they can go and, you know, wreck someone else's business.
That's right.
And so that's how the values work. And it is so powerful. And I think if you are listening, you haven't thought about the values and the culture of your business. That's the secret sauce. Like, culture eats strategy for breakfast. So, and every business that I see that does well and really crushes it, you know, works and focuses on building the culture. And I think that that shift with understanding culture is, you know, is part of the mindset changes that that happen for a successful business owner. And I'd love to dig into some of the other mindset changes that you've, you know, that you've been through, Steve. So what have you actually had to do from a mindset perspective to achieve the success that you've had so far?
I think the biggest one is probably I can't do it by myself. We can't be perfect at what we do. We're never going to be perfect. We can shoot for excellence. We can shoot for the best we can be, but we're never going to be perfect. So those two things, letting go of those two things is pretty huge for me. And that was a big mind shift change, because coming from basically a one-man show where you controlled everything, and now we're way beyond that. I think some of the other stuff is, it doesn't happen overnight. You know, we're in the long game here, and, you know, we have to be persistent in our desires and our goals. We have to set goals. That's a big one too, is the goals I had for the company were in my head. They weren't on paper, so nobody else could see what I was shooting for. So I could never get buy-in from everybody. And now we're all on the pretty much on the same page going forward. So I think that is, again, been very helpful in changing my mindset for sure.
I love the one about you can't do it all yourself. Yeah. And that there's so much to that, because it's about relinquishing control and understanding that there are other people who can do things well. And I think fundamentally, there is an inverse relationship between control and growth. And if you want to control everything, you cannot grow. It's impossible, because you are the bandwidth, you're the limiter in the business. That doesn't mean the business should be out of control if you grow. There's a whole bunch of other stuff there, KPIs, right structure, accountabilities, all that's part of it. But relinquishing that control is massive. So I think that's a great share for the listeners as well. And I think the thing with the company too is, if you want to retain good people, you almost have a responsibility to grow the business as the owner and the founder or owner, because those people want somewhere to go. They need some pathway. And if they don't have pathway, they tend to go somewhere else where they can find pathway. And we see that a lot. So I think it is part of the responsibility of a business owner to you know, really focus on growing the business for everyone, not just themselves, but for the employees, probably more importantly, as well.
I do think that one of our biggest failures right now today is that before I would meet with people almost on a daily basis, right? The teams would come in, I would chat with them after the day. I'm not doing that much anymore. And I think our biggest failure right now is me communicating out to the people more than once a month at our safety meeting. So we're actually implementing some stuff right now where we're going to send out a Monday morning video to the entire company of, this is where we're at, this is where we're headed this week, this is the project we've won. And hopefully that will push away some of this negativity we have about how we are growing and me relinquishing some of that control. So I'm hoping that will help us as well.
This is a brilliant observation, and something personally I've experienced in our business as well, which has had significant growth, is that sometimes the culture that you've worked so hard to develop comes under a little bit of pressure, because people are getting a little bit disconnected from the source of that culture, right? Which it does come from leadership. And so I also am putting a lot more effort into being more visible in the business. And I think that's a CEO's role. It's almost like the chief reminding officer. Right. Remind people about what we're about, what the standards are, that they're valued, that we care, that we listen, because you do all those things, but if people don't know that, they don't know it.
That's right.
And so I think that's a very astute observation, Steve, to be very, very visible. That's a responsibility. It's actually something I find challenging sometimes, because I'm not probably a bit like you, a really out there kind of guy, but right. It is part of the responsibility. So that's a good reminder for me too, Sue. I appreciate that.
Yep.
So, mate, how important has getting some outside help been for the results that you've had with the business?
Well, like I said before, when I started looking for help, I was in the midst of the live or die year. And I'm a pretty persistent guy, and although I was very defeated at the time, I don't think we would have gone away, but we certainly wouldn't be where we're at today without the help of PT. You guys were what I was searching for, and you found me, and I'll leave it at that, but you guys found me at the exact right time. You provided me with an honest evaluation of me, the company, where we've been, where we were at, and where we were going. And that was huge. And I'm a blunt person, and I think I seek that from other people, and I get that from the PT coaches, right? I don't think I would have ever gotten it from any other groups that I looked at, because I think they were just selling stuff. You know, how in 6 months are you going to turn everything around? It's not possible. And you guys never sold me that. You know, it was about step by step how we're going to go from here to there. And I appreciate that. My family, I think, has my family's always owned companies. Every one of my brothers, my dad, but never to the level that we're at. And for me, there's nobody in the company I feel like I can have a frank conversation with. I certainly don't tell my wife everything that's going on up here, because she wouldn't be here, right? But you guys, I can call my coaches, or I can get on to our boardroom group and talk through stuff. And it doesn't, you've said it, it doesn't matter if I'm a $30 million year company, and the guy in my group is a $5 million year company. We're going through the exact same thing. It's just on a different scale, right? So having somebody to bounce ideas off of, hold me accountable to what I've said, to, you know, to force me into the right path, I think has been huge. And like I said, if I hadn't found PT, I probably would still be here, but we'd be a $4 or $5 million a year company, and we wouldn't have a future like we have right now. So, I mean, I can't say anything but praises for you guys and the team.
And I think the lesson here is, if you're stuck, you need to find help from people who know what they're doing, and whether that's PT or something else. Don't stay stuck. Don't try and reinvent the wheel. Don't try and work harder doing the same stuff that's not getting you anywhere. That's the key message, man. It's been real fun talking today, and appreciate your honesty and, you know, your candor and your insights as well, because there's some absolute gold nuggets in what we've talked about today. And I think, Steve, one of the things that excites me about your business is the sky is really the limit here. And I have this exciting feeling that the best is yet to come for you and the business. So I can't wait to, you know, to watch that progress, and perhaps we can go to the ranch and go hunting next time we're in
Yep.
Texas. That'll be fun.
You come down anytime you want.
Yeah, it'd be amazing. So thanks, brother. Appreciate you, and it's been
Thank you, Tony.
fantastic to hang out.
Have a great day. I appreciate it.
Next week on the Profitable Tradie Podcast.
Ever feel like you're answering the same questions 12 times a day, or like your business would fall over if you left it for more than 48 hours, or that your team just don't get it? Now, here's the truth. Your business doesn't need more of you or even better employees. It actually needs your brain on paper. Now, tune into this episode where we discuss the importance of systems and how you can create strong SOPs that will transform the productivity and efficiency of your business.
Congratulations on being part of a select group of savvy business owners who are taking their businesses to the next level. And to help you on your journey, don't forget to check out our show notes for a copy of our free book, The Profitable Tradie, and other valuable resources. Thanks for being a part of this special group, and we'll see you in the next episode of the Profitable Tradie Podcast.